Joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Is it just you?
I think so.
Okay. We will wait.
Okay.
Awfully quiet.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said it's awfully quiet.
I know.
Well, I'm almost afraid to say something because I'm afraid it's going to reveal a secret if I tell you. Because they come in fast and furious.
They do. But you're not revealing a secret.
Well, sometimes I'm not sure.
In which case, you ask the question in your mind, and you'll get your answer.
Has joined.
Well, I think because of the timing, I don't think these secrets should be remaining secret. So I'm really bad at that, if you want to call it about wrestle.
I hear you. Good afternoon, Malka.
Good afternoon.
We will begin with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabarifu Ishkinte Bitkilu Urchimu Utkilu Utkilu Urchimu Liakta L'shem Yudhe Bavavhe L'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayhino amadunai Elohino alena maasei yadenu kanenei alena maasei yadenu kanenehu. We are continuing our study of the Sefer Evolution of God. We are entering part 5, titled The Secrets of Spiritual Evolution, What It All Really Means. A comprehensive review of the Kabbalistic Seder, Ha'ishtalshlut, as found in the Kitvei Ha'arizal, the writings of the Ari. The introduction. It is recorded in Sefer Baal Shem Tov that Rabbi Yisrael ben Eliezer, the famed Baal Shem, once admonished a man for teaching Kabbalah publicly. Surprised, the man responded that Rabbi Yisrael also taught Kabbalah in public. Why then shouldn't he? The Baal Shem Tov responded and said that when he teaches Kabbalah, he makes sure that his students understand that all the lessons of the supernal worlds also apply to this world and to the inner world of man himself. This other fellow, however, was teaching the Kabbalah as it is written in the books. Do we all understand this paragraph? I would be willing to bet most of us don't, because the questioner of the Baal Shem Tov, the person receiving the admonishment, did not understand. By teaching Kabbalah as kibushuto, a literal reality, as opposed to its actual psychological reality, the Baal Shem Tov told the man that he was committing a grievous error of trying to understand the metaphysical worlds with a physical mind, which is an impossible task. The inevitable consequences of such an act are that the Kabbalah is misunderstood and possibly misused. Such awesome power, misdirected, could unleash devastating results. It was best that such a teacher who lacked the insight of how to properly understand and how to correctly apply the Kabbalah, not to teach it at all, rather than teach it wrongly. Anna, this is what we were talking about. In order for one to receive the fullest benefits from the study of Kabbalah, one must be able to understand it properly as the internal system of consciousness, expansion, and psychological transformation that it was meant to be. And in order to do this, one must be able to penetrate the veil of Kabbalistic metaphors. Before I go on, I just would like to explain, and I've explained this before, Rabbi Bar Sadok, with his background as a therapist, is oriented to psychology, and he perceives the Kabbalistic metaphors in the frame of psychology. My teachers were not oriented to psychology, and they taught that it was a different level, that it isn't psychology that is the higher level, that the same mistake that the teacher was making, speaking of it literally, is made when Brian applies
has joined
a psychological standpoint. So what is the way to understand the Kabbalah? And the answer is, you don't understand the Kabbalah. You never will. You will connect to the wisdom, and you will connect to your intuition that will explain the wisdom, will allow you to understand on a limited level how to utilize the wisdom. The only reason I use the word understand in that context was because English doesn't have another word. The Hebrew word that would be used instead of understand is dat, knowledge. You will learn to know how to use the Kabbalah. And this knowledge is a tool. And that's how it is to be used. I'm continuing to read from this introduction. In order for one to receive the fullest benefits from the study of Kabbalah, one must be able to understand it properly as the internal system of consciousness, expansion, and psychological transformation that it was meant to be. In order to do this, one must be able to penetrate the veil of Kabbalistic metaphors. Now let's read that, these sentences without the word psychological. In order to receive the fullest benefits from the study of Kabbalah, one must be able to utilize it properly as the internal system of consciousness expansion, as well as transformations that it was meant to be. Transformations as to your character traits. Character traits are not psychological. Character traits are implied through astrological influences. And in order to do this, one must be able to penetrate the veil of Kabbalistic metaphors. I hope you appreciate the difference in the two paragraphs. One was written by Rabbi Bar Sadak, and one was explained based on the teachings that I have received. Continuing to read. All the secrets of the Torah have been concealed and written in code-like fashion. When properly deciphered and understood correctly, the Kabbalah unleashed the untapped power locked up in the human mind, the same power used in the creation of the universe. Such power can only be entrusted into the hands of those who are of appropriate moral and spiritual character, those that can be trusted not to abuse it. Kabbalah is a far more than mere metaphysical philosophy. Kabbalah is much more than mystical thoughts and obscure concepts. Granted, major sections of Kabbalistic study are learned through philosophy, through thoughts and concepts. Nevertheless, the lessons learned must be properly applied to one's life. This was the message of the Baal Shem Tov, referenced above. When this occurs, one's life is transformed. One's consciousness expands and becomes inclusive of previously invisible levels and worlds. The problem long associated with Kabbalah study has been the inability of its students to fathom its depths with understanding. My own rabbi in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Meir Levy, who has passed, once told me that his own chavruta, his own study partner, a master Kabbalist in his own right, knew everything written in all the books of the Kabbalah. My Rav told me that his chavruta could quote almost anything from any source. However, my Rav warned me that although his chavruta's knowledge was broad, it was not deep. Although he could quote any book, he could not explain to another in depth what it all meant. I asked my Rav then, what was the point in such study? He responded and said that was his point exactly. If you do not use the tools that you learn through the study of Kabbalah, what is the point? And each of my students, I'm asking that question in different ways. Because its purpose, I describe it as experiential. You study the Kabbalah to experience it, not to understand it. When we use the word understand, that's not the way the Kabbalists use it. When we use the word understand, we are studying the Kabbalah for the purpose of developing it as a tool in our lives. This is not the way most people teach Kabbalah today. But it is the way the Kabbalah was taught in biblical days up through the Chabad organization, up through the Hasidic movement. And since then, it has become lost. It has been misappropriated. It has been taught in a different way. That's my opinion. I can prove it on a logical level. But it's not the purpose to prove it on a logical level. I'm continuing to read. Over the years of my personal studies and teaching, I have endeavored to understand that which I have learned. I confess that I have only been partially successful. It is quite difficult to understand the depths of the ocean of the Kabbalah with a human mind that at best can only hold a few drops of the sacred knowledge. Nonetheless, I feel that it is my duty to give thanks to my Creator and to share that which I believe Hashem has granted me wisdom to understand. I think, as my students, you know that I do share what I have learned. I do not share what I understand. Many questions I've asked, I don't have answers for, but I continue to ask the questions because I know that ultimately every question will be answered. The study of Kabbalah is designed to expand your consciousness, whatever that means to you. Unlike my own Rav and the majority of my peers, I do not limit myself to study only one of the many Kabbalistic schools of thought. In this, I follow in the footsteps of Rabbi Chaim Vital. Although I may quote from sources that disagree with what he taught, Rabbi Chaim was what I call an eclectic Kabbalist. Although this was zealously faithful to his Rav, the Arizal, nevertheless, this did not stop Rabbi Chaim from delving into areas that, according to his writings, had no source in what the Arizal taught him. I could expound on this topic and provide examples, but let it suffice that I have said it. Kabbalistic scholars know this to be true. Laymen need not burden themselves with the details. I wish to keep focused on the task ahead. I wish to provide for you, my readers, a series of essays that will provide you with a wealth of information, as well as deep contemplative messages that, when pondered upon, can transform your souls. As is my policy when I write in English, I will most often not be quoting my exact sources of information. While I will quote an author and his book, I often will not state where in the text the quote is from. I do this for two reasons. First, I do this to protect myself from those who wish to steal my work and claim it as their own. To expose them, I make them show the sources of material that I have quoted. More times than not, they cannot find my sources, and thus they lay them exposed as plagiarizers. Secondly, I must confess that many of the sources I quote contain important information and vital secrets that I believe are best kept concealed. If my sources were compromised, then less than scrupulous individuals could take advantage of things that they have no business in knowing. I am sure that in private discussions, I will share with my worthy students everything that they wish to know. These lessons will be formatted to be concise in words and in depth with meaning. You will benefit to read them numerous times. I will follow in the footsteps of many rabbis before me and choose very precise words to reveal much and to conceal even more. So read carefully what I say and what I do. What I say and what I do not say. With this introduction that Rabbi Bar Tzedok wrote, let us begin in the Sefer. I believe it's Hahishtal Shlut. Lecture 1. There are 14 pages in Lecture 1. We will not finish it today. We will get as far as we get, and we will complete the balance next week. But we need to know that this Lecture 1, literally, the 14 pages cannot be completed in an hour. Lecture 1 is titled The Ein Sof, the Infinite Pre-Existence. Unlike the Kabbalistic authors before him, Rabbi Chaim Vital traditionally begins his work with an organized review of the Seder, Hahishtal Shlut, the order of spiritual creation. This marks the first time that the order of creation is presented in a systematic form from its beginnings. Unlike other Kabbalists before him who were completely silent on this matter, Rabbi Chaim expounds ever so slightly on that which existed before creation. Rabbi Chaim explains in numerous places that prior to creation, all that existed was Or Pashut, a simple and undifferentiated light. This was the light of the Creator. It equally filled all places. There was nothing else, no place or no thing. There was not any up or any down. There was no right, no left, no beginning, and no end. Everything was simply this Or Pashut. Rabbi Chaim calls this light the Ein Sof, the infinite, with or without end. It is the essential state in which Hashem exists outside of all that he emanated. Now that paragraph has to be contemplated. Water, a swimming pool. Can I swim in a swimming pool? Are there places in the swimming pool where the water does not fill? Are there places in the swimming pool where the water is not? Is there places in the swimming pool where I am prevented from changing the water? I'm asking these questions of you because you need to answer them. If you think you have an answer, think again. Is there a place in the swimming pool where I cannot enter? The answer is, of course not. I can dive into any part of the pool. But the truth is, there is a part of the pool that I cannot enter. All of the other questions that you will re-listen to from the recording, all of these other lessons are going to cause you to come to different understandings, just as I did in this one. Contemplate the questions. Understand what is simple light. Contemplate what is Or Pashut. I'm continuing to read. Rabbi Chaim declares that this outside of existence light of the Ein Sof is far too sublime to be subject to human consideration. Therefore, he seals up discussion of the matter and forbids anyone from attempting any philosophical or intellectual investigations. We are in the dark about any authentic knowledge about the essence of the Ein Sof. We can ask one thing about the Ein Sof, and only one thing. What can we ask about the Ein Sof? What is its essence? But we can't determine that answer. We can only make an assumption of that answer. What is the essence of the Ein Sof? Is a desire to share. But the Ein Sof has no desire, and that is the paradox that I struggle with, that I have to work with, that I have to answer. What is the essence of the Ein Sof? If I cannot have its essence at a level that I can intellectually understand, is the light of the endless world, the Or Ein Sof, is it outside of creation? That's a question you have to answer. Most people would say, of course it's outside of creation. But there is no of course there is outside of creation. Because Hashem created everything, and everything we experience as creations is inside the creation. And we do experience the Or Ein Sof in a certain way, a metaphorical way. I'm continuing. If we wish to call it light, or Or, O-H-R in English, Aleph Vav Resh in Hebrew, then maybe we need to reinvent the meaning of this word specifically for an application to it. When we here in creation contemplate the concepts of light, we immediately think of something bright, almost white in color. Yet this Or of the Ein Sof is not like any light here in creation. Essentially, the Or Ein Sof would be the opposite of anything here in creation. Therefore, maybe it is correct to say that the Or of the Ein Sof, instead of being bright and white, would actually be more similar to the symbolic terms, to darkness and black. The Ein Sof can be considered the unconscious that exists prior to the rise of consciousness. A careful review of it, Chaim's description here, may indicate to us that indeed this is so. As he progresses to discuss the reason of creation, Rabbi Chaim reveals significant and important information about the Ein Sof. That he has direct application and meaning to mankind. In the opening lecture of his Otzrot Chaim, Rabbi Chaim states that there arose a desire within this Ein Sof light. Rabbi Chaim states that there arose a desire within this Ein Sof light at its very center point. The desire that arose in the center point of the infinite and formless, or Pashut, of the Ein Sof, was to be called by his names. Let me repeat that. The desire that arose in the center point of the infinite and formless, or Pashut, the simple light of the Ein Sof, was to be called by his name, as Rabbi Chaim says. How can God be called the merciful if he has no one to whom he can show his mercy? As with this, so it is with all the other appellations by which the Creator is known. In essence, the purpose of creation was for God to bring appellations by which the Creator is known. In essence, the purpose of creation was for Hashem to bring into actuality the names and attributes that only existed in a potential form. Let me repeat this. In essence, the purpose of creation was for Hashem to bring into physicality, into actuality, not even physicality, actuality, the names and attributes that only existed in a potential form in the Or Pashut of the Ein Sof. Essentially, the purpose of creation from the divine point of view is for Hashem to manifest his conscious being, which lay dormant or concealed within the dark light of the Ein Sof. Prior to creation, God's existence may be defined by what we may call anti-existence. Essentially, the purpose of creation from the divine point of view is for Hashem to manifest his conscious being, which lay dormant or concealed within the dark light of the Ein Sof. Prior to creation, Hashem's existence may be defined by what we may call anti-existence, not a non not a non-existence, which negates existence, but an anti-existence, a type of existence so unknown to us that we cannot fathom what exactly it is. And in this concealed state, all we can say about Hashem is that Hashem existed only in a potential state. It requires creation for the peaceful situation. And this is where we are going to stop. Because what else is there to discuss? the Or En Sof, the endless light, the simple Pashut light has an existence. But that existence is outside of creation. As a human being, we are inside of creation. Therefore, the Or En Sof exists in potential, but I can't define its potential. The Or En Sof is not within the creation. The Or En Sof is not within me. But the Or En Sof is within me, because it is everywhere that there is creation. There is everywhere where the space was created through the Tzimtzum. So the Or En Sof is here within me, but it cannot be within me. And this is the paradox that your contemplation needs to resolve. Does anyone have any questions or comments or thoughts? As this is where we will stop in page 186. Partially through the chapter, lesson one, in part five.
I have a comment, maybe a question.
Go ahead.
Maybe the En Sof, the darkness, is the reason why Hashem comes to the garden to converse with the Tzaddikim at midnight, because the desire of the light does come in once the rotation of light comes in. So light does come in after midnight. So I don't know if that's a connection to the darkness revealing light, the desire for light, and that's why he comes at midnight.
It is a question. But in order to answer the question that is being asked, I have to ask, what is darkness of light? The Kabbalists ask the question, when you turn on the light in a room, where does the darkness go? The answer is the darkness goes into the light.
Right.
So the darkness of light is the same as the light itself. But how can darkness, the opposite of light, be light? That's the question that has to be contemplated. The darkness of light and the light are the same. They are related. There's either light or darkness. But they are the same, but they are opposite. And this is the paradox.
Well, there's always desire in either or. I think we kind of mentioned that darkness is desire.
Darkness is to what?
Is desire. I think we talked about how darkness is desire, D-E-S-I-R-E.
So no, what we said is darkness is a metaphor for desire.
Okay.
What is desire? Define desire for me.
Well, desire is to obtain I'm not sure how to describe it.
And that is the first step in learning to use the tool. That you don't have an answer to the question. Does that mean that you are incorrect because you don't have an answer? Does it mean that the answer is just not yet revealed?
Okay, well, I'd like to make a comment because it was desire. That was the first paragraph of that particular page on my book. It's 197. But to me, the aim self as a desire, but we can't define desire. But if the aim self in potential, and I don't know if that's the right word, has a checking off, has because it takes the feminine waters to create a desire. So there had to be within Ein Sof the Shekinah to start the female waters to give him the desire to have them, to want creation. I don't know if that's right thinking or not.
there's no such thing as wrong thinking. There's no such thing as right thinking. They all relate to each other. But
well,
that being said,
okay.
There's no desire in light because there's no space for lack. There's no desire in light. There's no space, which means no darkness in light. But where does the darkness come from? It comes from a lack of light, a lack of the fulfillment. We're not playing with words. The contemplation is what creates change. There's no answer to these questions. And the intellect would say, so why ask the question? We will stipulate there is no answer, or better yet, there is no one answer to these questions. So why are we asking the questions if there is no answer? Is there multiple answers?
Well, I think it's whatever we're available to understand of Ein Sof, since we aren't supposed to understand Ein Sof, we're gaining for at least, and I don't want to use the word understanding, a more of connection to Ein Sof that we're allowed to connect to without over-connecting where we're not supposed to enter. I did that without using the word understand.
Yes, but can you duplicate it? Can you repeat it?
Well, I can see it in a picture with the...
Yes, but you can't paint me the picture, can you?
You know, I can try. I saw it as the birthing process, you know, in the act of creation with Bob just shooting out just like sperm and going all the way up to Ein Sof.
So what you see coming out of the womb is a male member.
From where? from the darkness of Malkut, and I don't know what other word to use for Malkut.
Well, it's not the darkness of Malkut. It's the darkness of the light of En Sof.
Sof, okay.
But the picture you described in words, which we know is limited, but you said it's you see it as the creation process that a Vav was shooting out of the womb. So that's what the words I heard you say. Whether you said those words or you just said something else, that's what
no,
I heard
did.
You say.
I did, but I was comparing the metaphor of how the temple was built with...
But the temple is much far down in the creative process than what we are talking about.
Well, there's a Shekinah that comes out of darkness.
But it cannot be
a
Vav.
It's not really darkness, which is really light, because there's no difference between the darkness and the light. Oh, gosh. I'm going to just shut up for now.
You're doing fine. But you're getting to the point where the darkness and the light are the same. So if the darkness and the light are the same, why, what's wrong with me following the negative system?
Well, there's a certain point of following the negative system that isn't negative. Now, don't ask me to explain that.
No, I actually understood that statement, so we're both crazy.
Good. Because 10 plus 1, you know, 10 plus 1 makes 11.
Correct. And 11 means the 10 Sephirot plus the negative system.
Mm-hmm.
And the negative system is encapsulating the 10 Sephirot.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the light of the Or En Sof? How can you define what is not definable?
Right.
How can you ask a question when the question has no answer?
We have to ask the question.
You have to ask the question is correct.
It's to me the same way that you can sit on the throne on an invisible God. And he holds you, and you kiss him, and thank him, and run off, and he calls you back by name, picks you up, and kisses you on the cheek. See, that's why I can't explain it. I know it. I have the essence of it. And that's the best I've ever been able to word anything.
And the great Supreme Court judge, who I don't remember his name, but his statement is, I cannot define pornography, but I know it when I see it.
Mm-hmm. And everyone has to experience that themselves.
And everyone does experience it themselves.
Yeah.
And that's why you ask the question, what is the light of the Or En Sof? Because you have to contemplate it, arrive at an understanding that is not an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You arrive at a level where it has changed you from before you've asked the question to who you are after you've asked the question. That's the purpose of the contemplation. You change. Before you asked the question, you were at one level of consciousness. After you've contemplated the question that you asked, You are at a different level of consciousness. But you haven't arrived at an understanding of the answer, have you? But you've changed. And that's why it's called Cuckoo Kabbalah.
Well, I don't think it's so crazy.
No, it's not crazy because it's useful.
And that's why I so appreciate the tools that you do before our classes actually start. At least I know if I set my clock and I make that time, if I happen to have so many distractions during the day and can't get to it myself, I've done it in the classes. And how valuable those tools are.
But how many people, and I don't want to know the answer to the question, because I know the answer to the question. How many people, hearing the beginning of the classes, will sit through it? They don't sit through it because it can't be understood. And if it can't be understood, if there's no answer to the question, don't ask the question. And that's what's happening in the Kabbalah, in the other teachers. Not that I'm such a unique teacher, not that I'm so special, not that Rabbi Bar Sadok is so special. This is the tool that we have been taught in different ways, with different words, with different pictures. But that's the process of change.
And I think that's what Rabbi Akiva was trying to tell us when he saw the water hitting the rock and eventually making a dent in that rock. I mean, those tools, even though you consciously don't think anything is happening, it's happening. A little drip, a little drop, mazel, you know, coming down on that hard, what would you say, foreskin of the heart?
The heart of stone is being transformed drop
right.
by drop.
Right. And I think that's why it's important to see and to hear, you know, to follow along with the Hebrew as well as, say, like if we're doing the Torah portion, not just listening. And I mean, we're busy, so it's hard. Sometimes we're late, can't help it. Sometimes we have to be in the kitchen and listen. We're not able to do both the visual and the auditory at the same time, but I can see the difference that it made in my life when I could do it and when I can do it. Even though on a conscious level, you're not thinking that. But in time, you see the results.
We're going to leave it here.
Okay.
Because we could literally spend 17 hours on this.
Right. Yes, it's never ending. But that's the beauty.
So in an hour, we will have another class on advanced reincarnation, which will be clearly the Or Ein Sof. Shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you all.